Welcome back, everyone. We're diving headfirst into early 20th century Russia today. We've got some excerpts from two academic chapters, one on Lenin, one on Stalin.
Yeah, some really dense material full of historical details.
And our goal, well, to untangle this complex period when Russia went from czars to comrades. Mm-hmm. How did it happen? What did Lenin actually do? That's what we're here to find out.
It's going to be a wild ride, but by focusing on the big players, the big events, we can get a handle on what shaped the Soviet Union.
All right, so picture this. 1917, World War I is raging, Russia's economy is, well, a disaster. People are fed up, demanding change. Tsar Nicholas II, he's feeling the heat.
Understatement of the century.
And he makes a decision that changes everything. He abdicates. Poof. Romanov rule. Centuries of it. Gone. What happens then? Things settle down? I'm guessing not.
Not even close. This abdication is like a bomb went off, creates this massive power vacuum. A provisional government pops up, but man, they're in a tough spot, trying to keep everyone happy.
Not an easy task, I imagine.
No kidding. You've got all these competing interests pulling them in different directions, and then there's the Petrograd Soviet. Think workers and soldiers. Basically a rival power to the government.
So even with the Tsar gone, no clear path forward. Sounds like a recipe for, what, chaos, instability.
Exactly. And that, my friend, is where Vladimir Lenin comes in. April 1917, he returns from exile. Now, here's the kicker. The Germans helped him get back.
No way. The Germans, talk about playing with fire.
They wanted Russia out of the war, figured Lenin would stir things up, and boy did he ever. Lenin drops his April theses. It's a bombshell, a call to action.
Okay, I'm all ears. What's in these April theses?
Radical stuff. No compromise with the provisional government, straight to a socialist republic, like now. This put him at odds with other socialist groups who wanted a more gradual approach.
So Lenin's not messing around. Sounds like he had a clear vision and a lot of conviction.
That's one way to put it. And his message, peace, bread, land, it resonated with the people. They're tired of war, tired of going hungry. The Bolsheviks, Lenin's party, they start gaining serious support.
Okay, so on to the October Revolution. I always pictured this as a huge uprising, the people storming the palace, that sort of
thing. Well, our sources paint a slightly different picture. See, the Bolsheviks, now they're in control of the Petrograd Soviet, and they launch this thing called the October Revolution, October 1917.
Dramatic timing.
They take over key buildings, including the Winter Palace, where the provisional government was. But it wasn't the spontaneous outpouring of popular rage, more of a strategic takeover. Very well organized.
So a power grab by a powerful minority. Interesting. They topple the government. What happens next?
Well, first they try the whole legitimacy thing. Hold elections for a constituent assembly, you know, trying to establish a formal government. But when the Bolsheviks lose to the Socialist Revolutionary Party, no less, Lenin, he makes a choice.
He wasn't a fan of losing, was he?
Not exactly. He dissolves the entire assembly. He says it doesn't really represent the will of the people. Bam, no more multi-party system. And then he creates the Cheka, the secret police. That's when the Red Terror kicks off. A brutal campaign to silence anyone who disagrees.
Wait a minute. So the guy who is all about giving power to the people shuts down the very assembly elected by the people. That's a bit contradictory, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one of those head-scratching moments. But Lenin, he truly believed the ends justified the means. To him, securing the revolution, even through violence and repression, that was everything.
From czar to comrade in what, a few months? But at a cost, clearly. What happens next? Does everyone just accept this new reality?
Oh, not at all. Russia plunges into a brutal civil war. Reds versus whites. Bolsheviks on one side, a mishmash of anti-communist forces on the other.
A country divided. I bet that was a chaotic time.
Absolutely. Chaos, uncertainty, the whole country split in two. And guess what? The Allies, they weren't exactly thrilled about this communist revolution, sent troops to help the whites act.
So it's not just internal fighting. We've got international players getting involved. And in the midst of all this, a key figure emerges on the Bolshevik side, Leon Trotsky.
Ah, Trotsky, a brilliant military mind. But more than that, he was a master of propaganda. Understood how to boost morale, rallied the Red Army to victory with powerful imagery, slogans, the whole nine yards. His role in their success can't be overstated.
But victory often comes at a price. To fund the war effort, Lenin implements war communism. What exactly did that entail?
War communism, think survival mode at any cost. Nationalized industries, took food from the peasants, forced labor, everything, and I mean everything, went towards winning the war.
Sounds pretty drastic.
It was, but desperate times, desperate measures, right?
Well, they won the war, but what about the people? All that sounds incredibly disruptive, not to mention harsh.
It absolutely was. And the consequences were devastating. Famine, peasant uprisings, suffering on a massive scale. It's a stark reminder that even revolutions have to, you know, consider the people's basic needs. War communism showed the limits of ideology when you're actually trying to run a country.
So war communism, a real shock to the system.
Mm-hmm.
But did it work? Did it help the Bolsheviks solidify their hold on power?
It got them through the Civil War, that's for sure. But yeah, the long-term effects, as we talked about, not pretty.
Right, so that's where the new economic policy comes in, the NEP.
Mm.
Always seemed like a bit of a 180 from what they'd been pushing for.
It was a major shift. 1921, the country's on the verge of collapse. Lenin, he introduces the NEP. It's like, okay, yeah, let's take a step back.
Yeah.
Allow some private enterprise back in, almost like a touch of capitalism to get the economy moving again.
So the champion of communism, embracing capitalist ideas. Talk about a plot twist. Seems like he was willing to adapt to stay in charge.
You got it. The NEP, it shows Lenin's pragmatism. Ideology is one thing, but people got to eat. A nation's got to rebuild. He was willing to compromise, to keep the revolution alive, even if it meant bending some of his core beliefs.
Makes you wonder what he would have done if he'd lived longer. But his health wasn't doing so well at this point, right?
Yeah, a series of strokes. And he starts to worry about the future, about who's going to take over. This is when he writes his testament, really critical of some of the top Bolsheviks, including, get this, Stalin.
Hold on. Lenin had doubts about Stalin. That's huge, especially knowing what happened after Lenin died.
It is. In the testament, he's worried about Stalin's ruthlessness, how he might abuse power, even suggested removing him as general secretary of the party, almost like he saw the danger coming. But sadly, his warnings, they fell on deaf ears.
When Lenin dies in 1924, that's when the power struggle really heats up, right? It must have been a lot of ambitious figures all wanting to take the reins.
Oh, absolutely. But Stalin, he was cunning, a master strategist. While guys like Trotsky were focused on ideology, on spreading the revolution worldwide, Stalin was quietly consolidating his power within the party.
So different approaches. Trotsky, more the charismatic leader, but maybe not the political mastermind that Stalin was.
You could say that. Plus, Stalin understood how to connect with the masses. Trotsky was all about permanent revolution, unsettling after years of upheaval. Stalin offered socialism in one country.
Focus on building up the Soviet Union itself. I bet that message resonated with people craving some stability.
Big time. Brilliant strategy, really. He positioned himself as Lenin's true successor, the one to protect the revolution, ensure its survival.
But we can't forget, Stalin was ruthless.
Yeah.
Eliminating opponents, that was kind of his style.
No doubt. Used propaganda to discredit them, labeled them traitors, enemies of the people. And if that wasn't enough, imprisonment, exile, even execution. The show trials of the 1930s, chilling examples of his methods.
Talk about terrifying. The fear, the paranoia of living in a society where any little thing could get you accused of treason. It's hard to imagine.
It was a system built on crushing dissent, enforcing absolute obedience. The NKVD, Stalin's secret police, they were everywhere, listening in on conversations, intercepting mail, creating this atmosphere of fear everywhere you turned.
By the late 1930s, the USSR is a totalitarian state. Opposition's gone. Stalin's free to reshape the country however he wants. Pretty sobering reminder of how power can corrupt.
Absolutely. And that's why studying this period is so important. Understanding how someone like Stalin could rise, create such a repressive regime, it's crucial if we want to prevent these kinds of things from happening again.
It's such a stark contrast to the initial hopes of the revolution, the dream of a more just, more equal society. It seems like somewhere along the line, things went very, very wrong.
They did. But let's not forget, Stalin wasn't just about repression. He had these grand ambitions to make the Soviet Union an industrial powerhouse, to modernize at any cost.
Which brings us to collectivization. And those five-year plans, right? Our readings, they painted a pretty grim picture.
Grim is putting it mildly. Let's start with collectivization. Stalin wanted to get rid of private land ownership, combine small farms into these massive state-run collectives, increase efficiency, boost agricultural output. That was the idea.
Sounds good in theory, maybe.
Yeah.
But taking land away from farmers who'd worked it for generations, I'm guessing they weren't too happy.
Oh, the resistance was fierce, especially from the kulaks, the more well-off peasants. They saw it as theft, a betrayal of the revolution's promise. And Stalin's response, brutal. Millions deported to gulags, forced labor camps, basically banished to remote areas, others executed.
The gulags, a whole system of labor camps scattered across this vast country. The scale of the suffering is hard to even comprehend.
It was a dark chapter, no question. The human cost of collectivization, immense. And the irony is, it didn't even work. Agricultural output plunged, leading to widespread famine, especially in Ukraine. Millions died.
A tragic lesson that even well-meaning policies, when enforced through brutality, can have unintended, devastating consequences.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And on top of collectivization, you've got the five-year plans. Ambitious economic programs to rapidly industrialize the country. Focus on heavy industry, steel, coal, oil, all that.
So while millions are suffering in the countryside, he's pushing for rapid industrialization in the cities. Sounds like a recipe for, well, more unrest.
But the pressure was immense. Workers pushed to their absolute limits, trying to meet these crazy production quotas. It was all about more, 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 often at the expense of safety and well-being. The Stakhanovite movement, named after this coal miner who supposedly set a record, it was used to glorify overachievers and pressure everyone else to keep up.
It sounds like a system designed to squeeze every ounce of effort out of people. And if you didn't measure up...
There were consequences for sure, Monsieur Quota. Demotion, reduced rations, maybe even a one-way ticket to a labor camp. The pressure to conform, to exceed expectations, it was overwhelming.
So the five-year plans, maybe they achieved some economic goals, but the human cost, undeniable. Stalin's vision of a modern, industrialized Soviet Union built on a foundation of suffering, essentially. It's mind-boggling to think what it must have been like to live through that. But while all this was going on inside the Soviet Union, what about the rest of the world? Things were heating up in Europe, right?
Oh, yeah, big time. The rise of fascism, especially in Germany and Italy, that was a huge threat to the Soviets. The whole world was on edge, and Stalin, he had to walk a very fine line.
So how'd he handle it? Did he try to team up with other countries, or did he go it alone?
It was kind of a mix. At first, he focused on securing the USSR's borders, building up their military. Remember that socialism in one country thing? That meant focusing on internal development, not so much on spreading the revolution.
Right, right. So stronger borders, stronger army, kind of hunkering down.
Exactly. But then, get this, he actually joins the League of Nations in 1934.
Wait, what? The leader of a communist state joining an organization that was, well, pretty much seen as a tool of capitalist powers. That's a surprise.
It was a strategic move, pure and simple. He saw the danger of Nazi Germany and the League of Nations. It was a way to maybe build some alliances with other European countries who were also worried about Hitler.
So he's playing the diplomacy game, at least for a little while. Did it work out?
Not really. The Western democracies, they didn't trust Stalin one bit. Still had bad memories from World War I, and they were really hesitant to make any solid commitments to the Soviet Union.
And Stalin, I bet he wasn't exactly trusting of them either.
Nope, not at all. He was deeply suspicious of the West, thought they were weak, wouldn't stand up to Hitler. So you had this mutual distrust and that, well, it didn't end well.
This is leading up to that infamous Nazi-Soviet pact, isn't it? The one in 1939. Hard to believe those two ideologies, finding common ground.
It shocked everyone. That pact, it was pure strategy, both for Hitler and Stalin. A marriage of convenience, definitely not ideology. Hitler got the okay to invade Poland, which basically started World War II. Stalin got to expand Soviet territory and buy some time to prepare, just in case things went south with Germany.
So a temporary truce worked out for both of them in the short term. But ultimately, it backfired on Stalin, right?
Big time. 1941, Hitler breaks the pact, launches a massive surprise attack on the Soviet Union. Stalin was completely caught off guard. Those first few months of the war, absolutely devastating for the Soviets.
I can only imagine. The country had already been through so much, and now this incredibly powerful enemy invading.
The Red Army, they weren't ready. Stalin's purges had weakened them, and they just couldn't handle the scale of the German invasion. Huge losses, cities destroyed, millions killed or captured. It took a monumental effort by the Soviet people to turn things around.
It's hard to fathom the kind of resilience that must have taken.
It's a testament to the human spirit. They endured incredible sacrifices, fought with incredible determination, and in the end, they played a key role in defeating Nazi Germany.
Well, as we wrap up this deep dive into Lenin's Russia, it's clear we've covered a period of immense change. The fall of an empire, the rise of a totalitarian state, the devastating impact of war and revolution. It's a lot to process.
We've seen the contradictions of Lenin, his revolutionary ideals, his pragmatism, his ruthlessness. And then there's Stalin, a figure who really embodies both the hopes and the horrors of the Soviet experiment. He took those ideals and, well, twisted them into something very different.
It's a reminder that revolutions, even with the best intentions, can have unintended consequences. And sometimes the pursuit of utopia can lead to something much darker.
It also shows how important it is to be vigilant, to protect individual rights and freedoms, to hold those in power accountable no matter their ideology. The lessons from this period, they're still relevant today.
So, as we conclude this exploration of this turbulent chapter in history, I encourage everyone to keep thinking about what we've discussed, to maybe explore the sources further, and to come to your own conclusions. Ask yourselves, what can we learn from the past? How can those lessons guide us today? Those are the kinds of questions that can help us navigate the complexities of our own time.
And remember, history, it's not just a bunch of names and dates. It's a story that continues to unfold, shaping who we are and the world we live in. So keep exploring, keep asking questions, and keep learning.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Lenin's Russia. Until next time, keep seeking knowledge and keep asking those tough questions.